welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Bill Rowland, running the moonshine tonight for James Edwards, who's decided to take a little time off, and we are broadcasting, as always, from WLRM 1380 in Memphis, Tennessee. So we're going to get the show started right up. With me tonight is Keith Alexander, and Keith, we're living proof that the white race is not quite extinct yet.
Absolutely right, Bill. And by the way, let me make the comment that it's great to be on the show with you again. It's been a while since we've been on this show together. We've both been on with James, but we haven't been on with each other for a while. Let me jump right on your comment, if I could. You're right. We're still alive and kicking. But unfortunately for the white race, all the predictions are that we won't be for long. They're predicting that America will no longer have a white racial majority. It used to be the year 2050. Now they've revised it down to 2042. And as we all want to do here at the cesspool, we like to kind of think outside the box. And because of that, I think that it's entirely appropriate for us to begin our discussion this evening about the white race as an endangered species. This ought to endear itself to the hearts and minds of a lot of those leftists from the SPLC and other groups that are listening in. Maybe we're building a bridge, Bill.
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, one of the main objections that has been raised against this show, and particularly against the political cesspool website, is that we state emphatically that we want and hope to see the number of white children increase so that our proportional representation in the world is not diminished. So, for some reason, this really galls the leftists and the liberals to think that there might actually be white children still being born in this world. Meanwhile, in the third world, they don't seem to have a problem at all with increasing their racial and national representation, regardless of the effects on the environment or on their neighbors that surround them. So I find it interesting that we are the only people who seem to be on the watch list in anticipation of extinction rather than, doing anything we can to avoid our extinction. But, of course, this is part of the brainwashing we have suffered throughout the years. We've been made to believe that we are the villains of the earth for doing things like, I guess, inventing penicillin and the X-ray machine and all these things that, of course, the third world, they didn't benefit at all from any of this, from the medicines created by white doctors and scientists, from the advances in technology created by white scientists and engineers. And they benefited from none of that. It's just that we are the perennial villain in the world because of our mere existence, I guess, Keith.
Well, I think the exact phrase was by Susan Sontag that the white race is the cancer of human history. We were quoting her last week. Another bon mot she dropped on us was that the suburbs of America she sneeringly referred to as Christian breeding grounds. Now, by Christian, she meant white Christians, I'm sure. I'm sure she's not upset at the prospect of black Christians reproducing or having breeding grounds somewhere. And based on what you're saying before, it seems like Africa, South America, and Asia never read Paul Ehrlich's book from the 70s, The Population Bomb, or if they did, they didn't take it very seriously. Of course, white people did. But the real reason, following up this thread of the endangered species analysis, is that, like an endangered species, when our nesting grounds are disturbed, Bill, we don't reproduce, just like panda bears, just like snail darters, just like all sorts of other endangered species. We seem to be peculiarly susceptible to the problem of reproducing and not reproducing, in other words, when our nesting grounds are disturbed. And what I'd like to do, at least for the next couple of minutes, is start investigating and analyzing how our nesting grounds have been disturbed over the past 50 to 60 years. Now, specifically, I'd say that our nesting grounds have been disturbed by the Brown versus Board of Education case in America and the civil rights movement that followed. Basically, white people don't want to reproduce unless they think they have reasonable assurances of their offspring, that their children can prosper. What's happened in America, Bill, is that if you live in a place like Memphis, if you live in a place that has a substantial racial minority, and increasingly, even if you don't, the public school systems in America have gone to hell in a handbasket. And the alternative for the longest time was that you had to go to a private school. Then the private schools got taken over by left-wingers, cultural Marxists, the same graduates of the education schools that populate the faculties of the public schools, and they had the same outlook, not surprisingly. And as a result, faced with, you know, a tuition of about $15,000 per child per year, people understandably had fewer children. At least conscientious parents didn't. This was before the homeschooling movement came along, but homeschooling, we were just talking before the show today of how the left has started infecting the curricula of the homeschoolers as well. So consequently, we see the phenomenon of what we call the trophy child, about a couple having one child and putting all their hopes and ambitions and on this one child and putting all this stress on this child. Well, when you have trophy children, when two people have one offspring between them, you just cut in half the population in one generation, Bill.
By the way, Keith, let me take a break here just for a second and mention that our guest in the second hour will be Brother Nathaniel Kapner, an Orthodox priest who was born, raised, and educated as a Jew for the first part of his life, and who embraced Jesus Christ and became a Christian. And if you think that we're outspoken about Jews and what goes on in the minds of Jews, wait till your brother Kapner, Brother Nathaniel, because he's unsparing in his criticism of his own background. So
he makes us look tame. And let me tell you, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight, and Brother Kapner certainly drives the nail straight, Bill.
He absolutely does, and he'll be on in our second hour, as I say, and we're going to be discussing more about this, particularly the pollution that has entered the churches regarding racial consciousness and the effects of false Christianity in spreading the doctrines of Marxism disguised as the scripture or disguised as the social gospel, as Keith says. But there's more to it than that. It's an embrace of false doctrine and false belief. We'll be right back.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And we are back, everybody. This is Bill Rowland, not James Edwards. As I said earlier, I'm running the moonshine for the political cesspool tonight, but with me, as always, is Keith Alexander. And let me mention again, at the top of the hour, the next hour, our guest will be Brother Nathaniel Kapner, and we are going to have an outstanding interview with him because we're going to bring up some things that people have never thought about with regards to the various treatment of religions in this country. So, Brother Nathaniel will be with us in the next hour. Keith Alexander is with me this hour, and in the third hour, we're going to open up the microphones and let y'all call in, and we're going to have a long one-hour discussion, at least when I get the cue. Open the mics. Now, pick up where we were, Keith.
Well, where we were is we were talking about the disturbing of the nesting grounds of white people in America and elsewhere, and the treatment of the white race, which is supposed to be eclipsed generally both in Europe and in America and elsewhere. In America by the year 2042 now is a revised deadline date for when it's no longer the majority in America bill. And we've already explored one of the disturbances with the nesting grounds, which is the expense of educating children, which is, of course, a big part of the expense of raising children. You don't want to raise illiterate children. And unfortunately, ever since the racial integration of the public schools brought on by the Brown versus Board of Education decision, May 17, 1954, American public education has been in a complete, steady, relentless state of decline, Bill. And because of that, people feel compelled to look to alternatives to public education. These are alternatives that when I was growing up, my parents never had to consider. Every child in Memphis went to a public school unless you're a Roman Catholic or a problem child. Sometimes you had to be both to go there. And when you went to the public schools, you could be assured that you were going to get a good education. I went to public schools that weren't top-of-the-line public schools back then, but you could learn physics, you could learn calculus, and you could be prepared for anything that even the best type of colleges would throw at you, but that's not the case anymore. So the expense of raising children caused by school racial integration is one of the disturbances. Let's look at some other disturbances for raising children. Of course, you don't want to raise children for them to live in poverty, and affirmative action is one of the big facilitators of impoverishing white people. Now, white people are at the bottom of the totem pole. We have what the pundit Paul Craig Roberts calls the new feudalism in America, where, for example, if you are like feudal Europe, you have differential rights depending on what type of citizen you are. In medieval Europe, if a noble attacked a serf, that was a crime, but albeit it was a very minor crime. On the other hand, if a serf attacked a noble, that was a major crime. Well, we have the same thing now in America with hate crime laws. If a black person attacks a white person, that's simply assault or assault and battery. On the other hand, if a white person attacks a black person, that's not only assault or assault and battery, that's also a hate crime. So because of things like that, and then we have affirmative action where white people are at the bottom of the totem pole, not just for admission to college or admission to professional schools, but for just about any job you can imagine, all the way from being a fireman to being a member of the U.S. Supreme Court, Bill. And because of that, people realize that, you know, there's no equality between people now. You have black people and other protected minorities like Hispanics who get preference for the goodies in life. And when white people see this and react to it, their natural instinct is to not have a whole bunch of kids. They're going to have to focus their attentions and make sure that these kids outperform everyone else, or else they're going to be left on the side of the road. They're going to be on the outside of life looking in, Bill.
Well, Keith, I understand what you're talking about, particularly about the schools, but I think what must be kept in mind, particularly regarding the schools, is yes, the schools were good when you were in high school and school, and some of them were good when I was in high school, but that the stage had been set even before Brown versus the Board of Education to undermine the school system. Because the minds in the schools at the time were already leaning left, had already been the beneficiaries of the teachers' schools and teachers' academies had been put up by Roosevelt in the 30s as part of the WAPA project, and had already created, the monster was already incubating long before Brown versus Board of Education. And that's one of the things that I think people need to understand, is that this system that's working against us now was already in the nest, so to speak, long before any of us were born. And it's going to take a radical change in thought to get away from some of the attitudes we still hold about good old America, because we got to realize that the enemy's been in the halls and in the workshops for a long time, working to undermine this country.
Well, at least since the Woodrow Wilson administration, that was a very unfortunate situation where you had Teddy Roosevelt running against a Republican candidate, William Howard Taft. They split the conservative vote, and they got this wild progressive college professor named Woodrow Wilson in, and he gave us a Federal Reserve system. He gave us direct election of the members of the Senate so that the states no longer had a voice in Congress. And he started all manner of things, but you're right, you know, the egg was there. We had not only the Roosevelt administration's influence on teachers' colleges, we also had John Dewey and Deweyism. He's the type of person, his basic rubric was that education isn't about learning or mastering facts or skills or any of that. It's about psychological conditioning of children. That's why the left and the teachers' unions today think that the public schools are such a resounding success. The children that go to them may not be able to read or write or do calculus or even algebra, but on the other hand, when you give them a politically charged question, they can always be depended upon to give you the politically correct answer, and that's what they're aiming to do. So the egg was there. I think the egg cracked, or the broke, and the chick was born with Brown versus Board of Education. I think that if you wanted to do one thing to destroy the public school system, racial integration was the most expeditious, easiest thing to do to destroy it, and they've done it. And it just, you know, regardless of how it happened or what caused it, we now have an incredibly poor public education system, Bill. We have a public education system that went from being at the very top of the first world to being at the very bottom of the third world in terms of its ability to teach the skills that we normally associate with being an educated person. So they've made things difficult on purpose, and we basically are going to have to mobilize as a race the way that every other race does. We've got to lobby. We've got to have a sense of racial consciousness and solidarity, just like blacks, just like Hispanics, just like gays and lesbians do. And we've got to, without self-consciousness and without any apologies, start lobbying for our own interests. And if we don't, then they're going to continue to make our nesting grounds inhospitable to us. Being conscientious people, we will continue to have fewer and fewer children, and as we have fewer and fewer children, basically civilization as we know it will pass from the scene. You know, we're not a creedal nation the way that Jonah Goldberg and people like him, the neocons, say. We are a blood and soil nation just like any other, and if you, you know, black people have shown that they can't do this without white people. Look at Haiti. They have a French judicial system, a French governmental system.
Don't go away, the political cesspool guys. We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
And welcome back to the show. This is Bill Rowland standing in for the ever-popular James Edwards. And with me tonight is Keith Alexander, and as I mentioned before, I want to mention again real quick, our guest at the top of the hour, the second hour, will be Brother Nathaniel Kapner, the Orthodox priest who was born and raised Jewish and who came to know Christ and has a lot to say about his former background. So we're going to have Brother Nathaniel on coming up, I think, I hope, in the next hour. But Keith and I have been talking about the racial survival of white people and the various aspects of and the attempts to get rid of us as a people, whereas everyone else is encouraged to procreate and in fact to be told how proud they should be of their heritage. Now, one of the things, Keith, we talked about in the last segment was the schools and how the schools have been working against the white student, and you said the system, you know, has been destroyed. Well, I don't think the system has been destroyed. I think the white student has been run out of the system. But the system is still there. It's just not the same one we remember. But of course, the buildings are there, and the various ranks and files of teachers and principals and so forth did not change. The administration stayed in place. But as we were, as you and I both know, earlier we were discussing a large church here in Memphis, that a Protestant church that has gone from being very conservative over the years. In fact, at one time back in the 60s, the members of this church locked arms in front of the doors to prevent civil rights activists from entering the church and disrupting the service. So this is a church that has a long history of good, solid conservatism. It was taken over by a renegade preacher who at first posed as being very conservative, but then has gradually been poisoning the communion and poisoning the baptismal, so to speak, and is now introducing the social gospel into that church. You know, one of the things I noticed is that they are beginning what has become epidemic in churches, and that is this urban mission where you know the white church members go to black areas in Memphis and act as if they were missionaries in Africa, when in fact in most black parts of town there's a church on every street corner. I mean, it's not like this is the Congo, and this is, you know, there's a worship of trees and rocks. This is Memphis, where there's a church on every street corner, and yet this is, you know, these people flatter themselves into believing that they're carrying the gospel, to the ignorant savage, which may have some truth to it, but the fact is that it's really more, self-flattering and self-indulgent than it is any real effort on the part of these people to bring the gospel to anybody. And I'm going to go ahead and say that. But clearly it's being driven by something that is outside the scriptural realm. It's being driven by the society in which we live and the worship of Martin Luther King and the elevation of civil rights virtually to part of the New Testament. And, you know, your thoughts on that, Keith? I mean, you've seen this in these churches as I have.
Well, it's just, you know, a casebook study of cultural Marxism. They, you know, if you're a liberal and an atheist and you look at churches, you would say, what would you think? You'd say, you know, boy, they sure do believe a bunch of baloney, but you know what? Boy, they have some impressive real estate and they have some impressive buildings and they have a lot of influence. Let's subvert it and convert it so that it becomes an engine to help us achieve the revolution. And that's exactly what they've done, not only with the churches, but with the school system as well. Now, this church that Bill and I were talking about, we're going to leave it nameless for the time being, but it is a classic case of this type of cultural Marxist subversion. And it's obvious, as Bill said, that there's no need to evangelize the black community any more than the white community. There, as Bill said, is a black church on every street corner in the black areas of Memphis, just like there's a white church on every street corner in the white areas of Memphis. And when an area changes, the church remains. It just stops being a white church and starts becoming a black church. At least that's been the typical pattern up to now. They're not trying to spread the gospel, Bill. What they're trying to do is spread prosperity. They want white prosperity spread into the black neighborhoods, and they think that they can do it by mentoring and teaching these black children. In fact, this particular church we're talking about has gone so far that they have now gotten some poor, benighted white people to actually move into the ghetto. In fact, they had an incident in Memphis a couple of years ago where one of these guilty white liberal women saw some black woman with a child in hand flagging down cars and, you know, moved by great Christian largesse and brotherly love, she stops the car. The black woman gets in, cuts her throat, almost kills her. She falls out on the street, almost dies. Some friendly black person came along and I think took her to the, or called an ambulance or something, and, she was, you know, she survive the whole episode, but this is just the type of danger, this type of benighted Christianity. It's really liberalism is the real religion here, not Christianity. It's disguised as Christianity, but you notice how they, you know, James talks about cafeteria conservatives and cafeteria Christians. This is a perfect example of cafeteria Christianity. You know, when the Bible says something like, you know, about the lilies of the field, or beat your swords into plowshares, or, you know, good shepherd, feed my sheep. Well, then that is consistent and consonant with Marxism. So that's groovy. The Christian church is groovy, and Jesus is the first hippie. But on the other hand, when it says something like a man should not sleep with another man as with a woman, or a woman with another woman as with a man, it is an abomination in my eyes, saith the Lord. Well, suddenly the Bible has been transformed from this wonderful good book into this dusty old ancient book written by a bunch of Bedouins that we need to improve upon, wise people like ourselves. Well, see, this is what this leftist takeover of Christianity is achieving. It's basically just another engine for dispossessing white people of their wealth and their positions of authority and power in society. And white people are like a bunch of lemmings merrily joining hands and jumping over the cliff, Bill.
Well, it's true, Keith. And the problem is, of course, is that white people do not have a sanctuary in which we can develop and encourage our own racial consciousness. The black churches do that as part of the operation of the church. They quite openly talk about the black community and what's good for the black community, and bringing black teenagers into the church, and what needs to be done for blacks. No white church that I know of any substance or standing does that at all. What they talk about is what they can do for the black community and helping the black children and the black teenagers. And you talked a little bit about this movement of this urban church mission.
Hands that, across the ghetto, I call it.
Hands across the ghetto, or whatever. I know your favorite Leanne Toohey was part of that. The woman who was portrayed by Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side. You know, of course she was glamorized and glorified, but she's one of these people who has decided that whites aren't good enough for her, that she is going to become the patron saint of Binghamton or some other black area of Memphis, which is, you know, really kind of insulting to blacks as well, that, you know, that the great white mother is going to come in and wave her hand over the neighborhood and everything's going to be cured. But actually, what's happening, I think, is even worse, because many of these churches are loading up buses of white kids. These white churches are loading up buses with white kids, driving these white kids to dangerous areas of town, black areas of town, and these kids are doing grunt work. They're raking leaves, they're painting houses, they're doing grunt work. Or, in many cases, blacks are simply too lazy to do it themselves. And they're being told that by doing this, that this is their mission in life, is to rake the leaves, to paint the houses, to shovel the garbage, do whatever they have to do to satisfy the needs and the desires and the objectives of blacks. Well, you won't see black kids coming from a black church into a white neighborhood to do any of this kind of thing, unless they're going to be shaking a bucket looking for money. But the fact is that this is a phenomenon only in the white churches of loading up kids, and I'm going to talk about just teenagers, and driving into areas of town where they're neither safe nor are they learning the right thing about Christian service. Our job as Christians is not to rake somebody else's leaves just because they won't do it themselves.
Well, you're absolutely right, Bill. What is happening is that this is, again, the social gospel being put in the service of the left. We'll talk about it later.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And once again, it's not James Edwards, it's Bill Rowland standing in for James Edwards. A poor imitation, perhaps, but the best he could do on short notice. And with me, of course, is Keith Alexander. As always, the first hour belongs to him. And Keith, picking up where we left off about the churches.
Well, what you were describing was what I call the hands across the ghetto instinct of all these churches. Liberalism has infected every church from the Roman Catholic Church down to the most humble holy roller fundamentalist church now, and everything in between. This has been another great triumph for cultural Marxism. You know, cultural Marxism said that we can win, and it's not going to cost one drop of blood. We're going to just do the long march through the institutions. We're going to march through every institution that sets moral and ethical values, and we're going to transform their message from being the traditional message of those institutions into being one of radical egalitarianism. Blacks are the same as whites. Homosexuals are the same as heterosexuals. Criminals are the same as law-abiding citizens. Illegal immigrants are the same as law-abiding citizens. And even, you know, women are the same as men. That's feminism. And radical environmentalism, plants and animals are the same as or just as good as human beings. So that's what it's part of. It's a cultural Marxist paradigm that's operating here, and this is how it actually works its way out at ground zero here in your neighborhood and mine. Now, these churches that are doing this are basically accomplishing a tremendous transfer of wealth between the white community and the black community, Bill. That's their intention, and they want white kids to grow up programmed to think that they owe it to their dusky brethren to go out here and transfer wealth, effort, energy, and everything to make their neighborhoods just as nice as white neighborhoods. Of course, this is a futile effort. There's a 15-point gap between the average IQ of blacks and whites in America, and this is one of the ways in which it manifests itself. And that's why you'll never have a successful multicultural nation. And getting back to the original topic of the hour, this is why it should be looked upon with the full voting, not just by white people, but by all people. When white people fade into the sunset, and when we become a minority and an ever-shrinking minority at that, when we do, civilization will follow us, and you will have neighborhoods all over America, just like the slum areas that are in Detroit and Camden, New Jersey, East St. Louis, Illinois, and whatnot. But in the meantime, liberals really believe their own egalitarian claptrap, and they think that the only reason blacks can't keep you up with whites is because they don't have white money, they don't have, you know, white houses, this, that, and the other. So consequently, they're programming the youth of America to give it to them. They have all sorts. In fact, there are a lot of schools now where they're requiring a certain number of charity hours. And, of course, charity hours always have to be directed at black neighborhoods. You never hear about these school groups going into some poor white neighborhood like Horn Lake, Mississippi, doing the same type of good deeds. It's always directed at a black neighborhood. And when it's directed at a black neighborhood, of course, they're accomplishing this values transformation that they are seeking so assiduously, Bill.
Well, Keith, the point is, I think you might bring an interesting point up with Detroit and some of these other blighted areas that are actually third world cities in North America. But the fact is that these same efforts were tried there at some point. The evangelizing or the mission into the ghetto, and it failed. And so if these people don't learn anything else, they ought to learn from the example of the failure. And clearly there is a benefit, of course, to the black churches in the sense that if once they make this connection with the white church, they do get an outflow of money from the white church into these black churches, either directly or indirectly.
Black neighborhoods.
And of course, you know, when that happens, what it means is that the only way to sell this to the white church is to say, that they're going to have a cross-community event or something that's going to take place where all these people come together and put on some big show or have a sporting event, something of that nature. But what it really is, it's the transfer of wealth you're talking about, from the white church to the black church or to this black community organization. And, of course, in that same newsletter I showed you, Keith, there was that very thing, that, you know, here's a black preacher coming to town. He's going to be an associate pastor at another white Protestant church. And, of course, his whole activity previously had been with this so-called bridge building through athletics and sportsmanship and so forth, of, you know, transferring or picking the pockets of the white church and transferring it to the black community.
Well, that's exactly what they do. And you notice there's never any reciprocity. I've never heard of any black church hiring on a white assistant or a white athletic director or whatnot. They always, it's always one way. It's a game where the rules are heads I win, tails you lose. And, for example, you know, I was reading some article in the paper where a black actress whose name is, looks like, Tarja Henson was saying that Hollywood has a long way to go for diversity, really. And she says, I don't even watch the Emmys because why do I want to watch them? Where are the people I'm interested in there? Well, Tarja, I feel exactly the same way when I watch a college or a professional football game. Where are the people that I'm interested in watching? There are no white people there. See, if we had the same sense of racial solidarity and consciousness that blacks, Hispanics, gays, others did, we wouldn't tolerate it. We wouldn't support college athletics, football and basketball, or professional sports. And if we did, if the white money was withdrawn, you know what? They'd all go bankrupt within a year. If we had the same sense of racial solidarity that these other groups had, we could not help but rule. But on the other hand, we and we alone have been bamboozled and brainwashed into thinking that somehow what is right for every other group is somehow horribly wrong for us, Bill.
That's what I was saying earlier, Keith. White people don't have any sanctuary when it comes to our racial best interests or our racial welfare. We don't have the churches anymore. Instead, when we go to a church, we're told we need to put on our overalls and go immediately to a black community and rake leaves or paint houses. And in the schools, well, that's a dead letter or a dead issue. It has been for a long time. The country clubs are not an option because obviously they're pretty restrictive membership and prohibitive cost. But even country clubs now are reaching out and trying to diversify membership. And beyond that, years ago, Keith, you may remember that there were numerous organizations, beneficent organizations or fraternal organizations, where almost exclusively the membership was white. The Moose Club, the Scottish Rite, things like that, were almost entirely white. And there, people could at least exercise some feelings of white solidarity, even if it was outspoken. Those things are gone. And so now we live as nomads in our racial world. We go from one empty spot to another and are even afraid to talk about our own racial best interests among each other.
Well, that's exactly what Glenn Beck was doing. That's why Jonah Goldberg in a recent article said that even though he is frightened by the Tea Parties, he is heartened to hear, this is our good Jewish neoconservative, Jonah Goldberg at the National Review, that apparently Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin are preaching that the Tea Party is not racial and doesn't have a racial bone in its body. It's all creedal. It's all based on principles and whatnot. See, we've been scared away from doing what every other group has done, and quite frankly, we're fighting the culture war with at least one and probably both hands tied behind our back as a result of that. And how can we ever hope to win a battle with one or both hands tied behind our back? We are losing, and it hasn't affected everybody, but soon it will. Soon your children are going to be thrust to the bottom of society. Soon you're not going to have a job deindustrializing America under the one world government rubric is just another piece of the puzzle. Again, it's all cultural Marxism. The law of march through the institutions, as Bill said, without those institutions, we have no place to go to organize, to have any sense of any positive reinforcement for our own sense of racial solidarity. And compare our churches with the black churches. The black churches are absolutely 100% for black advancement. White, the NAACP was created for the express purpose of lobbying on behalf of black interests. And if it's all right for them, why is it not right for us? You know, the state of Israel is an apartheid state. They use in other nations throughout the world are the biggest advocates for multiculturalism.
That's very true, Keith. We'll be back.
And two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival. That broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.